almost invariably they try and get away. So Nick's experience is a typical experience of coming across a leopard at short distance. All you see is a blur of spots and colour. Gone.
I think they're firmly established in the food chain. They're obviously breeding. I was 12 when I first saw the Black Panther, and those cats are still reported in the same area now. They're here to stay.
Welcome to Big Cat Conversations. We speak directly to people who've encountered one of Britain's big cats. We also discuss the bigger picture. I'm Rick Minter, and thanks for joining me. Hello and welcome to Big Cat Conversations. A very happy Christmas season and happy Yuletide to everyone. And of course, good luck with everything, not just Big Cat investigations for 2024. For this edition, we are joined by Adam. Adam is an ecologist and he works across the English Midlands. And in that region, he's especially familiar with Shropshire and Nottinghamshire. So we're going to hear mostly about events in those two counties. We've got several talking points to go through with Adam, and he's had a recent encounter, which we'll hear about, of course, and we'll get to that a bit later on in our chat. So, Adam, great to have you on the show at last. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, thank you, Rick. Trying to stay warm and dry at the moment, but yeah, good, thank you.
You got some snow in the Midlands there in Nottinghamshire, and we haven't here. We're just drizzly and soggy in Gloucestershire because we're talking in early December. And I know parts of the country have got snow, and I know that on Facebook there was a very good deer carcass, a really grizzly eaten out deer carcass with prints along the side of the road. And a guy without a dash cam, I think, had seen a black panther, I think it was, black leopard perhaps, dragging the deer and left it, I think, was disturbed by the traffic, and the tracks were there. So just goes to show the snow can reveal the evidence sometimes.
I've not seen that one, but I think from my sighting that we'll get to, traffic, I think, does play a part in many ways. And it's not, doesn't surprise me. And it's quite a short window quite often with snow, and it's all gone. We've had it on the ground for 24 hours max. So it does show that if you get the opportunity to get out and have a look, you really should.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, thank you for that. You were introduced to the subject years ago by your grandfather, is that right?
Yeah, my granddad. He was no longer with us. He grew up right on the edge of Sherwood Forest, so in Edwinstowe, and spent most of his time as a child playing in the forest. So I was lucky growing up with him. He'd take me for walks in the forest all the time. He'd take me fishing. And he's probably the reason that I got into, you know, conservation and ecology, because he'd point everything out to me. You know, going for a walk with him, you didn't realise, but it was like a classroom. You know, what's that? He'd teach you everything. But he was ex-military, very, very straight-laced, didn't drink, and always super reliable. And like I say, grew up in the forest, so he knew the difference between a deer or a dog. You know, straight away, he'd tell you what that was. He told a story, and you say a story. As a child, you think, oh, that's exciting, but he'd been coming back from, he used to shoot rifles. So he'd come back from rifle club one night, and it was, you know, dark, quite late. And he was on the Edwinstowe to Mansfield Road, and a large black cat ran across the road in front of him. Been on that road thousands of times, grew up literally half a mile from there. And as I say, he knew the difference between a dog and a deer and that. And he used to joke, you know, oh yeah, I saw one of those when it was in the media, but genuinely talking to him, he definitely had. There was no two ways about it. And he said it was, you know, height of a Labrador, all black from what he could see, but he saw it for 2 seconds in his headlights. But he was adamant that that's what he saw. And he could, you know, take you exactly to where it was. And that was my introduction, really.
That fired up your imagination as a youngster then, did it?
Yeah, I guess that he probably told me that in the probably late 80s when I was 8, 9 years old. And I guess not long after that, I think there was probably in the 90s, there was probably The Beast of Bodmin Moor, and there were a few things on the TV around then, and probably rechecked in with him about that. You know, he said, well, I'm not surprised. I don't not believe it. He's based in India in the Second World War. And he'd say to me, if animals don't want you to see them, you won't see them. He'd been lucky. He used to go trekking in the mountains on his, you know, they were actually more like the United Nations in the Second World War. They were peacekeepers. So he got a lot of spare time. So he saw a lot of wildlife out there, but ironically said he hardly ever saw a big cat of any type out there. And he was out there for a couple of years, living in the jungle.
Well, great for him for instilling that interest in you. And we next go to a period of your life at university, because a student just before you wrote their dissertation on potential for big cats in Britain. Is that right?
Yeah, at Nottingham Trent University. It was there in the library. I think they were a couple of years above us. So probably did that dissertation circa 2001. And I did pick it up and have a read, because we were encouraged to read all of the dissertations. I mean, I did mine on something slightly smaller. I did mine on water voles, but whilst there, it was very factual. And to be fair, knowing my ecology lecturer, there's no way you would let him not be factual.
Good that they had seen it as something legit to do your dissertation on.
Oh, 100%. I did ask my lecturer about it at the time, and I think he said something to me along the lines of, and this would be about 2002, you know, well, tell me, you prove to me they're not there. It's that simple. Prove to me they're not there, because you can't, can you? So it's an open subject. If I remember about that dissertation, there are lots of talks about what makes the UK suitable for them. Only it's the same as, like, you know, my dissertation was looking at the fragmentation of habitat for water voles. So what are the blockers? And I think me and you touched on it on the phone when I rang you the other day about that effect of, if someone knows that there's water voles in an area, they're easy to keep going and surveying, and people ignore the other areas. And I think that's the same with big cats. People think, ah, there's been a sighting there. So it's focused upon. And my old MD used to have a really good saying, don't tell me, show me. And, well, it's a bit of a funny one, isn't it? You can't go to a textbook and say they're 100% there, but you can't say they're not. That was the ethos of that dissertation, really, that if they are here, which a lot of work, you know, there's been a lot of work in the last 20 years that backs it up, that they are, a lot of hard evidence, but there was no reason that if they were here, that they wouldn't thrive.
And of course, being such generalists, they don't need optimum habitat. Optimum habitat is, of course, great for them, but they can survive in suboptimum habitat, which they do in many parts of the world, and no doubt here. Yeah, back to your point about finding water voles and other critters in places where they're not officially distributed. Well, that would be what I would probably term the recorder effect, and we touch on that sometimes. We tend to classify things and map things where we know they are, and not look so much beyond those known points or the known beats of the people who are taking the recordings and taking the sightings of whatever the creature is, the plant or animal that's under survey. So you found water voles well beyond their normal range in your work, I gather.
Yeah, I was fortunate that when you're doing a dissertation, it's free rein, and I based it on a river, and I dropped into areas where there were not county records. I went to some of those areas where there were county records, historic records, but I go to some pretty unlikely areas. I'll be honest, with a bit of local knowledge as well, I found populations thriving in areas where you think, God, they'd never be there. But when you thought about it, there was food, there was shelter, there was everything they needed. It just didn't look suitable because there was a lot of litter in the water. They didn't care. They didn't care one bit. They were really happy there. And I also, I did quite a lot of surveying of gravel pits. And yeah, found some on a gravel pit complex where there'd been no records. They'd established themselves really, really well in an old ditch system that had probably been undisturbed for at least a decade. You know, they were really, really thriving in there. But when you went back to the county records office, there was nothing. There was nothing, you know, and you'd had a huge aggregate company on there, I won't name which one, but they'd been on there for decades and still were, and they'd had multiple surveys for every time that they opened a new pit up, you'd be looking for those species and there was nothing. So it just goes to show that just because people say they're not there doesn't mean they're not there.
We have a very good, well-established biological record system throughout Britain, mainly county based in England, and let's hope that in the future we can get big cats in their various guises into that system officially. People like Shelley Coles and others are doing great work mapping them through Facebook sightings, but let's hope we can get beyond that into the official system.
I've never thought about that, but there will come a point when it is easier, and it's probably going to be DNA related, I'm guessing, to extract that data. And you've only got to look at great crested newts, where go back a few years and you had to do a proper emergent survey and trapping over a set period of nights. And now you can just take a DNA swab sample of water course and it'll tell you if they're present or absent. Massive leap forward, which is a game changer.
Yeah, that's environmental DNA, is it?
Yeah, that's environmental DNA from a water course, but the great crested newts leave a marker, enough of a marker within the water course that you can tell if they're there or not from a sample.
If a fisherman saw a big cat drinking water at a small fishing lake, would that be worth checking for environmental DNA?
I don't know. I don't know to the extent. It must be. Obviously, newts have got a large surface area and they are constantly secreting. But I think the DNA will come from kills, to be fair.
Yeah, you say that. I mean, I've swabbed many, actually, fresh and filleted out and ticks all the boxes for a big cat. I then get them looked at. You know, I make a judgment myself. I get them looked at. Sometimes I'm the person who does the swabbing. Sometimes it's the informant who's on the site well away from me who does the swabbing. And we get no results or we get fox. The lab just gives us the result. They're not saying, oh, you got that judgment wrong. They're just saying, we found fox saliva on it. So we are really struggling to beat the foxes. If our judgment's right, and I think largely it is, we are struggling to beat the foxes to avoid their saliva on the DNA swab. So it's not happening at the moment, that way of DNA sampling, unfortunately.
Frustrating, but there may, like I say, changes, developments may make it more accurate. And I don't know, I was thinking outside the box, it might be a case of, I don't know, working with a zoo and seeing how long it degrades, you know, get them to feed on something. And
the lab I collaborate with, Warwick University, did actually ask the zoos to do that. So they would wanted to feed something to a big cat and then take it away before it's all finished, as difficult as that would be. Put it to some foxes. Warwick actually did check with a couple of zoos to see if that was possible, but they couldn't do it because it was a breach of regulations, unfortunately. So thwarted again. But I think you're right. I think we'll get there eventually.
No, you will. You will, definitely.
Yeah, good stuff. Right. Now, your first time you saw an interesting cat in the countryside was a jungle cat, was it? You had a jungle cat sighting?
Pretty confident it was a jungle cat. Dusk in an area of Sherwood Forest on my mountain bike, going up a main forestry track. And this cat emerged from just a probably year-old replanted spruce and just thought, oh. And then you just stop and think, it's quite big, really. It's quite chunky for what it, you know, it's not a domestic cat, is it that? And it was carrying a rabbit in its mouth and it trotted across. Just the way it moved was slightly different and just went into the thicker stuff on the other side of the track. But it was a really clear sight and it was probably only about, I don't know, 15 metres away. 100% not a domestic cat. Too big. And then when you get back and you look and you think, well, yeah, that's probably a jungle cat. You know, it's no big cat, but it certainly isn't like my cat that's laying the windowsill. You know, and he was a big Tom. He was a good yardstick, my Tom cat. He was, you know, as big as a normal domestic cat will get. He was a real, real big boy.
Yeah, I always think jungle cats are about the size of a, perhaps not quite the size of a dog fox, but a vixen size. They obviously can't kill a deer, but rabbit killing is easy for them, and they would have been out. And they are seen. I've seen one and heard one and wrote about it in my book, and other people report them very faithfully. And, of course, they would have been out, a bit like servals are out sometimes and reported because people have them for breeding savannah cats. Previous fashion was Shousies, and then Felis Shous, the jungle cat, was in captivity and people had them for breeding Shousies. So the designer cat at the time.
Yeah, 100%, 100% what it was. And you're right, it's probably a good description, you know, the size of a vixen. So still bigger than my cat. You just tell by the way, it was obviously a strong animal, stronger than my cat, because it was easily carrying a rabbit. And it was just the way it moved as well. It was different. You know, it trotted across, had a quick glance over its shoulder, spotted me. Just the bound was more powerful as well. You know, as it just thought, oh, I best get into some cover. It wasn't massively bothered about me as well. I got the feeling it was used to people. And in that part of the forest, it would be.
They're also called swamp cats. Very aptly named. I mean, again, they're generalists, so I think they can manage in a range of environments, but the people do see them in marshy sort of riverside and wetland areas. They've got long legs for managing that terrain. I don't know whether you noticed that.
I guess that gives it the height, doesn't it? Yeah, it definitely got a different gait. But in terms of a really clear sighting, that was probably like 5 seconds, which sounds silly, but if you say to people, if you've seen a deer, now, I'll be honest, in Shropshire, where parts of Shropshire where I live, there's a lot of deer, hell of a lot of fallow deer. I once, when I'd first moved down there, went out on my road bike, went by a field and thought, oh, they farm deer. No, they don't, because the gate's open. That's just a big herd of wild fallow deer. And when I've put camera traps up, there's a hell of a lot of roe deer and there's muntjac. And they, they're quite troublesome, actually. Everyone's either hit one, nearly hit one, or knows someone who's hit one. And Nottinghamshire as well, I'd say the last 5 years, quite an influx. The woods where I've been mountain biking quite a bit this summer, I used to mountain bike them more as a teenager and in my early 20s, and I'd rarely see deer. And this summer, I've seen loads of them. They are everywhere. But they're normally bound across the track, and you get a second. That's your lot. But you know it's a deer. But you do get them where they're stood in a field, and they're having a look at you. But it's interesting that I saw that cat for 5 seconds. I knew what it was really well, clear as day. But you register a deer because you know what it is. But it's only a second. It's literally only a second if you time it. You couldn't get your phone out of your pocket, unlock it, and photograph. It's well gone. Which I think is why so many people don't get the evidence with big cats. It's literally a fleeting glance, or it's at such distance. The golden photo will be dash cam footage, 100%. That's what will prove it, in my eyes.
Yeah, well, jungle cats are a nice thing to see, and of course they've got small territories. So, I mean, the one I saw, we were following up Frank Tunbridge's sightings, and then we heard it out with him. And so it was hanging around in this area on the edge of the River Severn near Gloucester. Perfect territory. Very interesting little cats. And I guess the key thing is, are they interbreeding with our ferals and creating slightly bigger size cats?
Mm.
Frank Tunbridge has a photo of what might be a melanistic jungle cat. It was chasing a spaniel. And it was shot, and so he's got this photo of a large cat body, but again, I would say vixen size or just a bit bigger. But it's a mean-looking thing, and you think, is that a jungle cat, or is it a jungle cat bred with a feral, making some kind of hybrid, weird, cat? I get shown photos like that at the rural shows, and they're either hybrids or mutants or a bit of both. So they are there, but they're not leopard and puma scale. Now, before we get to your sort of recent event of a couple of weeks ago, you've had a couple of other glimpses of interesting cats, haven't you? You saw a black serval type thing sometime when you were mountain biking as well, is that right?
Yeah, probably second lockdown when we were allowed out again a bit for some exercise and in Shropshire. And yeah, just biking along and thought, what's that? Quick glimpse. Or instantly you always think it's a black Labrador. And 9 times out of 10 it is, but there it was, walking across the hedge line with a fence, and it stood next to a 5-bar gate. I just stopped, trying to get the backpack off to get the phone out of it, but it just stood there for probably 2-3 seconds looking at me, and it's just these long legs. The ears, you could tell, they weren't rounded, they were pointy, and it was just the general shape of it. It's hard to compute. One, that doesn't fit in, that's not what we should be seeing right now. But two, it's not a big black cat. It's not a leopard, is it? That's what is that? Your brain's trying to do a million calculations at that point. What is it? And it turned sleeked off under the fence by the time I got my phone out. But I then biked over there. I wasn't thinking, well, whatever that was could be pose me any harm. And I looked at the gate and I thought, yeah, that's, went, got home, looked on my phone. I know what a serval looks like. Looked at the height and thought, yeah, that's a black serval, that. That's got to be what it was, or it's second generation. I don't know what they class them as, designer cats, but it got all the characteristics, but it was black, so melanistic.
So you thought the second option was a melanistic savannah cat, perhaps?
Possibly, but it just looked serval-shaped, the outline of it. I was a lot further away than the other, my first sighting, which would have been nearly 20 years before. So whatever it was a decent size. It wouldn't have taken a deer, but it would have made absolute mincemeat of rabbits. But around there as well, there's a huge pheasant shoot. So I can only imagine that it was doing very well on those.
Was this the, where you went through the spinney and saw the pigeons landing in the puddles?
No. And again, that was like a fleeting glance. That was out on the road bike. So quite a lot of time on bikes. Early in the morning, I'd have the sun on my back at that point, and there's a big gap in a hedgerow. But you get quite a baton on a road bike. And there it was, just the outline of a cat sat on its haunches facing the sun. My cats do that now. They love sitting there squinting at the sun in the morning, warming up. Lynx kind of size and shape, but I don't think it was that chunky. And again, it's a couple of seconds. Saw it, slammed the brakes on, spun the bike around, and I just caught the back end of it slinking under the hedge. But that puddle, interestingly, had got quite a few pigeons sat drinking and bathing on the opposite side of it. And I thought, I wonder whatever it was. And it goes in that box of, I don't know what it was, other than a cat. I wonder if it was enjoying the morning sun, or was it waiting for one of those pigeons to land near it?
Yeah, or a bit of both.
Or a bit of both, yeah. Interestingly, you know, again, a very, very quiet back road that I was possibly the first person, vehicle to go by that morning. I am lucky where I live, because you are out in the sticks, and when you do go out on a road bike, for example, this is a good point. If anyone's listening to this and they want to see more wildlife on a bike, get a silent freewheel. It's very trendy to have a noisy, clicky freewheel, but have a silent one, because you're a dead giveaway from miles away if you've got that on. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Rick, but next time you're in the, you know, the Forest of Dean or somewhere like that, and there's mountain bikers, you have a listen. Some will go by coasting and they are silent, and then some will go by and they're making such a mechanical clicking noise. You're not going to see anything with that, because everything's heard you 200 yards in front of you.
And there's a lot of hybrid type mountain bikes now, aren't there, with semi-electric motorised ones?
Yeah, to be fair, my dad's just bought one and it's absolutely brilliant. It's hard work catching up with him now. It is, but that's really quiet. Really, that's stealthy, that is. You do have to pedal, but you can pedal gently. I mean, to be honest, I'm not running so much at the moment, but a big hill I'd run up in Shropshire, you know, you'd get these guys sneaking up behind you on these things. You didn't even hear him coming, because there's less effort being put in by the rider, and the electric motors, you know, they're really refined. You don't hear them. Genuinely, but you're on a road bike, you've got very thin, minimal contact on the road. If you've got a silent freewheel on the back, so when you're not pedaling, there's no noise as well. You can sneak up on stuff, you know, in the morning if it's first light, you know, quite a good opportunity to see deer, just wildlife out at that time of the morning. And the giveaway is that the birds, for example, will only startle in the hedgerows or fly up in the gaps in the field when you're literally on top of them. Whereas I noticed this on the mountain bike, because I have got one of those tarty, noisy freewheels on the back of one of my mountain bikes. Stuff's moving out of the way 30, 40, 50 yards in front of you, because it will hear you coming.
Thank you for that point, because you're quickly coming across things as well before they can evade you as well, I think, is important.
Especially with a silent freewheel, you're literally on the road bike, you can be batting along at 25 miles an hour. Stuff does not have the time to react before you're on top of them.
Okay, right. Now, there's one more incident I think we should cover before we get to your last week's sighting encounter thingy, and that is when your son pointed out something black in the landscape in Wales on holiday once. And I think it just makes a good point about a young person's observation and how frustrating it is when you see a black form that might be a cat but might not be, but you've got to dwell and consider it. So can you take us through that quickly?
Yeah, I think it's pronounced Kenneth Foyles in Wales. So it's Pembrokeshire, and it's the Afon Teffy River flows down to Cardigan. We were caravanning there in a field right next to the river, a lot of sea trout in there at that time of year. And we walked downstream about a mile into some woodland, quite high up there. You're higher than the river, probably by 20 feet, and the fields on the opposite bank are again lower than you. And my little boy said, "What's that there, Dad?" He was probably about 8 at the time. And he's always gone out. He goes out walking with me. He puts trail cameras out. He goes fishing. I said, where are you looking? He said, there, look there. So I'm looking in the trees in a thicket on the far side. And there was something black, undoubtedly something black. I saw it move. It definitely, you know, hunkered down. Now, we've got a black spaniel. So he's like, is it a dog? Like, well, I don't know. And you're looking then, because bear in mind, you know, you've got a good view across the fields opposite. There was nobody to be seen. Nobody. We stood and watched this thing for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes, and it wouldn't come out, which if you'd have left my dog there for 20 seconds, she'd have been out. There's no way. And it was big enough to be detectable and visible 30 meters away. So I'm not saying it's a big cat, but someone's got to explain to me what it was, because it was an animal and it was visible from 30 meters away. It was black and there was nobody, well, for 10 minutes came for that dog, if that's what it was. He'd spotted that, I'd not, and I was looking. He's spotted mink when we've been fishing quite a few times. Because I'll be honest, he's not staring at that float for all that time. He gets bored and he spots probably more than I do. But it's frustrating because it goes into the I just don't know pile. Don't just think I've got a I don't know pile of sightings of things that could possibly be cats. It can be all sorts in my line of work, but equally, I've fished for well over 30 years. There's nothing more frustrating than you know you've hooked something and got a glimpse of it and it possibly shouldn't be where it was. So yeah, there are things that are unexplained, but there's always an answer. But on that day, other than scaling down a 20-foot bank, swimming across the river, I want to know what it was.
Well, let's hope he's rewarded with a sighting when he's older.
Well, he's going the right way. He still likes to go out and put the cameras out. He still likes to go fishing and he likes walking and mountain biking. He's only 10, so he's putting the hours in.
Sounds good. Yep. Yep. Excellent. Righto. Let's get to the event of, I think it was a week and a half ago, you contacted me and I said, hang on, Adam, don't go through it. Let's hold it back for the podcast because I want to hear it first time on the podcast. So we have a sort of spontaneous, natural chat about it. So go for it then. This was a week and a half ago in Nottinghamshire.
It was. When I say use the term Sherwood Forest, it's not in the touristy sense of that Sherwood Forest. Sherwood Forest to me covers a large area that once was Sherwood Forest. So small fragment of Sherwood Forest, rarely walked in. You can tell that because it had been damp. There was probably only one set of footprints that I could make out there. Lots of other forestry commission sites you could park and are popular. So I went for a walk around there just to revisit, to see if there were some old mountain bike trails in there, to be honest, which I found.
It's worth pointing out, and this is why I think why I saw and got the opportunity to see what I saw, was it's close to a very, very busy road. So there's a lot of road noise. Even, you know, a couple hundred metres into the road, you can hear it. There's nothing stopping it. And on that day, the wind as well was blowing from the road as well. So that noise is pushing into the woodland. I'd been all the way to the back of the woods where the mountain bike tracks were. I'd seen a couple of deer. Again, I think because the road noise was masking me and I was walking towards the road. So again, any scent from me is blowing back the other way. And at this point, it was, you know, I sent you a photo. Tell by the quality, it's dusk at this point. It really is dusk. So I think that's another box ticked that I was walking back towards the road. So I'll get to the cat, but it wouldn't have heard me. It wouldn't have smelt me, and it's that time when they are going to start getting active, and that's why I'd spotted some deer a few minutes before. But it was quiet in those woods, really quiet. Nothing making a noise, other than the road sound. There was nothing other than a bunch of magpies as I started getting towards the road, really, really having a go. So what was I? You get used to this when you're out and about all the time. Just as I'm walking, there's quite a steep bank up to my left. And I can see them all in the tree, and they're dropping down, coming back, dropping. They're looking at something. I'm thinking, oh, it'll be a fox. It'll be a fox. And I just saw something black and thought, what's that? You know, and instantly think Labrador. But I think I've not seen anybody. But we're close to the road. It might have come in. And I just got a clear spot, literally a second between, not even a second, between a couple of pine trees where the bracken wasn't there, that's not a Labrador. That is a cat. Definitely a cat. So I'm scrabbling to get my phone out of my top pocket at this point. I can tell where it is because of the line of travel it was going, and you can see the magpies looking at it. And just as I getting my phone unlocked, it appeared off the bank in a really low. So whether it's clocked that I was there, I really don't know. But it was, you know, you'll know from you. I know you've mentioned you've got a domestic cat. When they're slinking, they don't want to get spotted, or they know that they've been spotted, but they just want to get out of the way. It's that kind of, wasn't hunting. It was a, I just don't want to be seen across the path. And I just snapped it at that point, the back end of it, just as it's going into the bracken and behind a tree on the far side. But I have been back and I have looked, I have measured that tree. And I said, I think it was a couple of foot tall, that cat. Now I've gone back and it's where it was, 2.5 foot, definitely. So I've compared and contrasted my photo to that tree. So whatever type of cat it was definitely in that hunched position, approximately 2.5 feet tall.
That's at the shoulder or head?
Shoulder, yeah. But it was the sleekness. It was, I mean, to me, it was just the grace in which it moved as well. Like, for that short split second of time going across that path, I can't describe it. It's like watching liquid go across that path. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I've had other people say that, say like oil or viscous, you know, that fluidity.
Yeah, absolute fluid. I mean, if people have seen like a mink move in and out of tree roots and things like that, it's just absolutely fluid. It never stops and it never missed a beat. It didn't bound across the path. But I could only describe it as being, if you've seen a cat in your garden and it knows it shouldn't be there, it doesn't run off, it slakes off, and that's what I'd describe it as. I think it'd already seen me, I think, at that point, but it was definitely going down, and it wanted to get to where it was going to. Don't think it was hunting. It was just probably off on its evening beat, if it had one. It was just so undeniably a cat right there in that forest ride, just for a second. It just came down the bank where I just clocked a bit of the black between the two trees, came along, literally couldn't see it for the bracken, and then sleeked across the path. Like I say, it literally just flowed across the path. It's beautiful the way it did it.
More of a silhouette, more of a shadow silhouette outline. So I'm going to ask you about standout features, but I guess that's more difficult when you've just seen a silhouette type form. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, the standout feature, other than you could tell by the way it moved, it was a cat, was just the length of the tail. Having domestic cats for years, it's like a domestic cat. It starts at the right angle, but it just carries on and then curves up. But so much of it, that was the thing for me.
A third more length.
Yeah, so much tail on this thing. Couldn't get a distinguishing feature, you know, I couldn't say I saw the colour of its eyes or whether it had any pattern to its fur, on its fur or anything like that, because it was, say, it's dusk. The photo doesn't give it justice. People listening to this all know if you've tried taking a photo of anything at dusk, and it really was getting quite dark in there at that point. And I did stand there and think for a minute, what do I do? Do I go that way or go back the other way? I did go back the other way. So. I went and had a look the next day at that tree. So just the fact that it went right behind that tree, that you've got a mark to go and measure against.
I got the sense that you thought it's a young one and not sort of fully grown, perhaps. Is that right?
If you'd have said, pick a sex, I'd have said it was a female. It just seemed very, very elegant. I didn't feel it was massively muscular on the shoulders or anything like that. So maybe it wasn't a fully grown. You just get that feeling that it's not fully filled out. Maybe it was and it just was a small female. I don't know. Because I thought it was 6 inches shorter than it was. And then I went back and looked and thought, no, I've measured. It's about 2.5 foot. I thought 2 foot. And I was a good distance away when I took that photo. I must have been 35 metres away. If you just gave that photo to someone, say, find where I think that you won't spot it. You've got to really zoom in and look. Again, it's that time period to get your phone out of your pocket, unlock it and take a photograph. You've got no time, absolutely no time to do it.
And if you're too noisy, animals hear you and you give the game away as well.
Yeah, but I have thought about this now and I'm thinking, if I am purposely going out to look at wildlife at night and it's near a busy road, I will make sure I'm walking towards that road at dusk. You know, the ideal conditions, obviously, I've never really thought about it in that much detail, but wind coming from the road, push that noise into the woods or wherever you are, the landscape, and it's pushing your scent away. So whatever's between you and that road or that noise source, unless you're making a lot of noise, it's not going to hear you coming and it's not going to smell you.
What about its potential to take down a deer? Did you sense it at the time that it was a deer-killing size predator?
I don't think I'd see it bringing down a fallow deer, but bring down a muntjac easy. And probably easily tackle a roe deer. Maybe not a roe stag, but definitely a roe doe, not a problem. You look at proportion-wise, it must have weighed similar, got to weigh similar. I think anything bigger than that, no. Everything else that's on the menu in a woodland like that, so rabbits, pheasants.
Pigeons.
Yeah, easy, not a problem.
Had you heard of other ones that had the reports there?
No. And bear in mind that that's close to where I grew up as well. Never heard of anything. That's why it felt really special, actually, because it is there. It's not where you expect to see it.
I'd heard of sightings in the northern part of actual Sherwood Forest. So there was a lady on a podcast a few months ago, so like the Worksop end of like Clumber Park, that area.
Yeah, Phoebe.
Yeah, and that's quite a, you know, you've got a lot of heathland up there, just a lot of woodland and a lot of scrubland. I'd heard of sighting up there. I'd heard of them in Nottinghamshire on the Trent Valley, on a couple of gravel pits along there. Fishermen seen them in the morning.
I mean, obviously you're on the podcast, but we're talking about it vaguely. But is it an area you'll now keep an overview of and keep quiet in terms of not telling friends and neighbours?
No, well, you know, literally, I'm on a podcast talking about it, but no one could find it from that description, 100%. So camera traps out. I won't go back to that for a month. I'll leave it. There's no reason to, you know, tell anybody else, really, where that is. Just let, I mean, it might never be there again. You don't know, do you? So
that's the frustration.
And I think that is a frustration with the cats, and you've alluded to it already, that they're adaptable. So, you know, I always go back to people. If people say, well, you know, I don't believe in them, I'll say, well, that's your point of view. I do. There's enough evidence now. There's even DNA evidence out there, the tooth pit analysis. There's enough good photos, and I've seen an amazing video. So I'm in no doubt. Tell me when you saw an otter, because they're on every river network in the country now, and people just look at you, well, it's just the same. Just because you've not seen one, it doesn't mean that they're not there. But river otters are restricted by needing to eat in a riparian habitat, whereas a cat could go anywhere, absolutely anywhere.
And have a very flexible territory in Britain.
Yeah, and a flexible diet.
And it means more to you because you grew up there.
Yeah, it does. It does, and it's a bit affirming, really, that I've always said, I believe, because there's enough evidence and the body of evidence has grown. And to see, even though it's a brief, literally a glance, that's all it takes just to affirm that everything that you've thought is definite, or people have said to you, I've seen this, that it's true. Well, that's made it even more sweeter that it was really close to home.
Delighted you've got a trail camera out. Good luck with that. You better move on, because I know we've still got some more things to talk about. You've mentioned that a friend had a very good sighting in Shropshire that influenced you. Could we hear about that one?
Yeah. This is somebody who's got no, I'll be honest, absolutely no interest in the outdoors other than going out with the dogs. She's not in any way going out there to look at wildlife or anything like that. It's just to be outside, walk the dogs. And she was on a footpath in an area that's, I don't mind saying where it is, people in Shropshire won't know. It's called the Wenlock Edge, long outcrop of limestone that runs from just south of Telford, almost down towards Ludlow, that direction, a good old strip. She was walking her two labs. They are boisterous, to be fair. They're a handful. And this one particular day, they weren't being a handful. They were behaving. And she was like, I wonder what's wrong with you two, because they were staying close to her. There was a commotion up from the bank to the right of her, and two or three fallow deer flew across the path, and there's a lot around there, so it's not unusual. And the dogs went to go, but didn't. And then a black cat shot across the path straight after them. Bang, straight across.
Right in front of her. We're only talking 10 metres. She didn't know about my thoughts on the matter, but she knows that I spend a lot of time outside. She rang me up and said, I've just seen this. What do I do? I said, what do you mean? What do I do? She's like, who do I ring? Do I ring the police? Do I ring the National Trust? Do I ring the council? What do I do? She's like, I'm 100% convinced what I saw. She's like, there's no, she's really straight-laced as well. There's no two ways about it. That is what I saw. I said, just talk me through it again. Are you sure it wasn't a black dog? It wasn't a black deer? It wasn't, no. It was a cat. 100% it was a cat. She's a bloody big cat as well. She was like bigger than the dogs, like longer than the dogs. She says it was bloody huge. And I said, what'd you do? She says, well, she said, luckily there was a bloke coming the other way, but round the corner about a minute later. And she says, do you mind me walking back to the car park with you? And explained to him what she'd seen. And as she says, she thought he was a bit mad, but she was really shook up by it. She wouldn't go and walk the dogs up there again. It didn't even look at her, she said. It was focused on these deer that it was chasing across the path.
The dogs hadn't flushed it out?
No, the dogs were by. They were behaving that day. You know, normally they're all over the place. If anything's chasing deer, it's those. But they were staying by her side that particular day. They said these two or three deer shot across the path really close. But this had come before all this commotion coming down the bank through the bracken. And straight in front of her, quite a wide path. It's an old railway line, actually. Yeah, whang, straight after them, literally right behind them. This black kid says it didn't even look, didn't miss a beat.
In hot pursuit.
Yeah, and she said you could just hear all this commotion down the bank. No screaming or anything, but just crashing brambles and twigs and bracken and just, you know, like she described it to me as like, you know, like when you're thumping on the ground, you know, you can really hear the ground. You can always feel it.
Vibrations and everything.
Yeah. We're about 2-3 years on and she still went walk her dogs up there. That has left an impression on her. And I said, how big? She said, like, really big cat. Those labs, they're not small. She's like much bigger than them.
Yeah, predator-prey relationships right in front of you in the British countryside. Quite a remarkable scene.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, thank you for that. And one other sighting report I'd like us to hear, if we could. You were visiting these guys in this porter cabin, having chats with them, because they were decommissioning a power station in a wooded valley. Can you tell us about what they reported to you?
Yeah, just came up in conversation. They brought it up. What do you think about these big cats? I said, what do you mean, these big cats? He said, well, you read about them on the internet, don't you? I said, well, yeah, I've heard what you're saying. And the crux of it was that one of the lads had gone to the compound that backed onto this woodland late at night, and he'd come back as white as a sheet. These are hardened guys. These are pretty, you know, demo contractors. It's a man's world, and it should never be in 2023, but it really is. Apparently this lad came back and he was as white as a sheet. And they said, what are you seeing? What's up with you? And he says, big cat. What do you mean? He says, big cat. So what do you mean, bloody big cat? And he says, big cat, like. And they were saying, what are we talking? And he said it pretty nearly dark. He'd gone up there at the end of the shift, and they said to me, round about the old 2.5-3 foot height, big black cat. Apparently it looked at him, he looked at it, and it just crashed off up into the woodland at the back. But he was terrified, absolutely terrified. Last thing that he ever thought he was going to bump into, just literally going to get some tools out of porter cabin. But they said literally he was terrified. We'll go up there again.
It's interesting how colleagues judge the validity of a mate's story by how emotionally impacted they are. You think they might be Mickey taking, but sometimes they don't, because they can see how emotionally hit the person is.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm lucky, who you alluded to. I do get to go to some really far-flung places, places where people don't get to go, really. That is the interest of my job sometimes, that there are pockets of land with, you know, it's normally deer. In the amount of times that I absolutely, let's take the term, wet myself on a
you know, oh my God, I've got really close to that, and it's hunkered down, and it's thinking, whoever's near me is not going to get near me. You nearly tread on it, and it jumps up and flies off the other direction. But it shows you that there's plenty of places in this country that you put your finger on a map, and you go, I wonder when the last time somebody walked in there was.
And you have reason to sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mention this to you before, but there's a company who do some, you know, aggregate quarrying in the Midlands, and the guy there's he's quite keen on his wildlife, and we were talking about, you know, just ecology, and the cats came up in conversation for some. It's probably me asking if he'd ever seen anything. I don't tend to do it every time I'm out, but just sometimes you get a feeling about an area.
Questions worth asking.
Of course, if you've got 200-300-400 acres of old gravel pits and old workings, and you know, you're seeing a lot of everything else, I'm going to ask, and if someone's interested, I'm going to ask. And he said, yeah, we did have some prints probably about 5-6 years ago. And he said, we actually ran to Twycross Zoo and got somebody out to come and have a look. And apparently they said, well, it looks as good as it's going to get, that it's a big cat. He jokingly said, you haven't lost any, have you? We're like, no, we'd know if we'd lost some, obviously. Again, just shows you that's somebody who is really straight-laced, that guy as well. He decided, I'm going to make the phone call because what I've seen doesn't make sense to me. And it's my land, I should know what's on there. Definitely not a dog.
Good for the zoo to come out and spend the time and give him a positive statement, even though it's tricky. Prints can be very difficult to make a really firm judgment on. Yeah, right. And the next one, of course, that we're going to talk about, where you're talking to people in isolated locations, is a couple of tenant farmers. And you're going to tell us about that one, if you could, without giving away the location, of course.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention where it is at all in the country. I was doing some work in an old, be honest, like an old borrow pit type thing. Talking to these guys, we were putting some boreholes in, and we just got talking about stuff. And I said, oh, there's a lot of deer around here, aren't there? You know, we were just talking. I said, I've seen loads of muntjac. Didn't think they were in this part. And we've just got talking. And one of them, I didn't ask, and one of them said to me, he said, oh, what do you think about cats? I said, what do you mean cats? And he said, big cats. So, well, open mind. I said, oh, I'm pretty confident they're here. And he says, can I show you a video? I said, yeah, of course, show me a video, not a problem. And he showed me, and I remember I rang you at the time and I said, I've seen this video. It must be about 3 years ago now, Rick. And I said, if you could have that video, nobody would ever doubt it ever, ever again. It'd be on the news, it'd be everywhere. And what it showed was, it actually goes back to what I was thinking about my sighting. I saw a black cat. This wasn't black. This was tan. This 100% was clear as day on video. They filmed it. Well, he filmed it. A mountain lion. 100%. There's no looking at it. If someone said, watch that, you go, yeah, that's a mountain lion in Colorado. But no, it's not, because it's got feel maple behind it, and it's got hazel, and it's got, oh, let me have a look, that is up there, isn't it, where we're sat now, that is up on that. And he's, yeah, 100%. And it wasn't a fleeting glimpse. It, you know, crept through some bushes on the left, I think it was, stood looking at them. You could see the white of the muzzle, bit of white on the ear, crystal clear. And then it slunk back into the vegetation to the rear, and I said, oh my God, when was that? And he said, you know, like a week ago or something. And he said, oh, we've had dead deer up here before, not, you know, eaten out, dead fallow deer eaten out. And I said, looked at him, and I can have a copy. It's like, absolutely no chance, because if we share this, that's us gone. That's, you know, he says, we've spoke to who owns the land, and they said, under pain of death, does that not go anywhere other than on your phone? Knowing what these guys have got to lose, very nice area to farm, it wouldn't be worth, sadly, no one's going to pay them £1 million, are they?
Well, of course, if they're tenant farmers, then there's a landlord who's obviously wants to guard the image of his land. I think you said that one of the issues was the angle of view would show to local people, at least who knew the area, pretty much the precise location. So the backdrop gave it away.
Yeah, it did. It was the top of this borrow pit stroke quarry on the, and it's, that's near to a road, next to a road. And it's just obvious. If you're local, it's so obvious what it is. because of the outcrops. But genuinely, if that was on the TV or the photo of it was on the front of a newspaper, or that'd be it. Case closed. There's not a consideration that they're not out there.
Yeah. They were out shooting early in the morning, weren't they? And it just sort of emerged. They were just lucky. It saw it scuffling away in the scrub, and they then got still and got the camera out, and it did actually then emerge. So total chance and luck, but at least they were ready for it and got the footage.
Yeah, they were. I had tried contacting them. I contacted a few weeks after. I said, have you not seen anything? I said, you don't have to. I'm not, you know, I don't want the footage. He said, no, we've just not seen nothing, heard anything, seen anything. But they had said that in the past, in that area, there have been heavily eaten out fallow deer carcasses found. Fallow deer carcass side of the road, it could have been hit by a car and been eaten out by anything over a period of time. But they're talking like in woodland, right away from a road. So, but it was clear as day. Thing is, within range, in good light, a mobile phone now is incredibly good.
They were lucky. It was daytime, wasn't it?
Yeah, great light, morning light. The light would have been behind them that time of morning, but there was no way. They wouldn't even let you have a still of it. There was no chance. But you could almost tell that annoyance, but it was obviously eating away in him that much that somebody who was probably a little bit reputable, not someone down the pub, someone a bit separate to it all. Can I show you that? What do you think? Because I think it was just the affirmation that, yes, bloody hell, fire. You know, I can't believe what I'm looking at. There have been others in that area. I'm careful what I say, really, but there have been other sightings around about there by farmers, but early morning, spotting something, and it's always been a black one.
Yeah, just shows you, the tan ones, the mountain lion type, do coexist and often in similar locations or same locations.
Yeah.
It's work around each other.
It reminds me, I don't think I've mentioned this to you, probably about 2 years ago, my son was on a, not far from where my friend saw the, it's on that road, there's a road that runs called Corfdale, so it runs down towards Ludlow. People in that part of the world will know where it is. And they got a Cubs camp, and it was red hot in the summer. You know, they'd got no fridge on site. So I said, look, I'll come down and I'll take everybody's lunch and I'll stick it in the big fridge in the garage, the spare fridge, the beer fridge. And I was talking to one of the mums and she says, oh, I hope they're going to be all right tonight. And I said, oh, well, I'll tell them all about the Shropshire big cat before they go to bed, jokingly. And she went, oh, no, I've seen it. I said, what do you mean you've seen it? And she swears that 2 evenings in a row, driving back from Ludlow, her and her friend, both saw a big black cat in a field, bounding across a field, within 2 fields of each other, if that makes sense, at dusk, roughly the same section of road, roughly the same time of night. I've never met this woman, never talked to her before, but she wasn't joking about it. She's like, oh no, saw that a couple of years ago. Are you sure? Yeah, 100%. I said, well, how do you know it was a big cat, not just a moggy? She went, well, it was running in a field where there was some sheep and it looked bigger than the sheep. So I think there's more people out there who've spotted things than you realise, to be honest. What you do with this podcast and the people who go looking, you know, there's people who, I'll put a camera trap out if I've got a reason. I will talk to people through my work occasionally. I'll keep my ears open, but there's people who are very active, but they don't get to hear about everything because it's so, so niche.
The topic hasn't come up in conversation for them to be prompted.
Yeah. And obviously when you go to these rural shows, people will come to talk to you about them. I've never shared this with you, but I relate big cat sightings to fishing in a way. You're looking for something or you're hoping something's going to come along. Sometimes when it does come along, you can't tell everybody that it has come along, if that makes sense. I've been told on good authority by 2 different people that a British record barbel came out of the River Trent last year. Everybody's been 100% confident it's going to happen. It's a matter of time. It's a maths game. The volume that are coming out close to the record, it's going to happen. But because of the club and the club rules,
If you claim that as a record and publicise it, you'll never fish in the club again. And it's like dash cam footage on a lorry. It's like CCTV. It's like tenant farmers. It's reputational risk. People, I don't think people want to share what they've seen, or they want to, but they can't. They can't have their moment of affirmation, because if they do, they either won't get the work again, or they won't work for that company again, or in this case, they won't fish that section of river again.
You're caught holding the explosive.
You are, aren't you? It's you. If it's your job, it's your job. You can't just lose your job. And if it's your passion, as in fishing, these places are very clicky as well. They're not going to let you, somebody else isn't going to let you in. Because, again, a lot of these places are very tight. You can't publicise what's happened for various reasons. And what tends to happen is someone will claim another record in 5 years' time, and that fish will appear then, showing, actually, it was beaten, but this one's bigger. But in that time, it takes for something to happen. Say, let's say somebody at some point spots one of these on a dash cam, for example, and it is 100%, 10 out of 10 video, undisputable. I would think if that got in the media and somehow the government acknowledged that there may be or there are big cats in the UK, but they don't pose a risk to people, I think you would have a flurry then, an absolute flurry of things coming in. Just takes the one.
Yeah, the emperor's new clothes sort of thing. People would feel a bit more confident in releasing what they've got.
Yeah, that it's, yeah, okay, it's a thing. So we will release what we've got. And there's no comeuppance for us as well for doing it.
Yeah, that's what people are worried about as well. Keeping the conversations going with these kinds of people, you never know what's going to be revealed. So, and nice that that one was a mountain lion type, to be honest, as well.
Thinking of my sighting, you know, a week ago, if it had been a mountain lion, I wouldn't have seen it, because I wouldn't have clocked it on the bank. In that bracken, I wouldn't have seen that cat. No way. So I wouldn't have got my phone out. I would have seen it on the path, but I wouldn't have been ready. I'd clocked something up the bank. Whereas being that colour, that tawny fawn colour, you wouldn't spot it. You really wouldn't. So if they are out there, same with jungle cats, you really, unless they jump in front of you, you're not going to see them.
The proportion of puma tan-coloured sightings is about 20%, 15% in the data, but actually they may be proportionately greater, but it's just that they're not spotted so much, not reported so much, so they're underreported because it's a cryptic colour in the countryside, cryptic colour in the landscape. They are very well camouflaged.
Yeah. It's like a bright orange koi carp swimming around in a lake, isn't it? I know black ones aren't bright orange, but a black one in the middle of a lush green field sticks out like a sore thumb, even at dusk. But, you know, you look, and I know lakes because of fish, where there are the odd large koi that's got in there, 20, 30 pounds. And on a good day, if it's anywhere near the surface, you can spot it from 30 yards away. But there could be several normal carp between you and it that you just won't see because of the ripples or the glare.
Yeah, nature's camouflage is there for a reason.
Mm.
Good stuff. Right. I want to ask you how it's influenced you personally and how it's influenced you as a sort of professional environmental consultant and ecologist. So personally, first of all, how is it influencing you?
You know, I'm not against them being there. I don't think they pose a risk. If anything, though, it just opens your eyes because, you know, I've seen something that I've seen videos before and I've spoken to people and I've seen, even though it's a second, I've seen something there now with my eyes. So you shouldn't ever go into any situation. I think this could be in your personal life as well. You can't be predetermined as to what you're going to see or find. It's like back to the old water voles. It's the crappiest ditch in the world full of tin cans and crisp wrappers, but they're there because it meets their needs. To me, you can't go anywhere and think you will or you won't because you just don't know. That's my thought on the matter.
The randomness, but you've got to put yourself in the place to have that random chance.
Yeah.
I'd hate to think, you know, if you could tot it up how many hours in the last, bear in mind, you know, I saw my sighting, the first one, circa 2001, 2002, that jungle cat. We're 20 years on, and I've seen an escaped pet, probably, that's what I'm guessing it was. I've seen something, I can't quite decide what it was. I've seen something definite. The amount of hours I spend outside compared to most of my friends and acquaintances, I'm out all the time. If it's, you know, I hate this time of year because it's dark and it's wet, and I'll still go out. I'll still occasionally go out for a mountain bike in the dark. And if I'm not out working, I'm out running, or I'm out walking the dog, or I'm out on the mountain bike, or I'm out walking, I'm spending my time out in the countryside.
And being pretty alert as well, alert to wildlife.
Yeah, even me. How many otters have I seen? Not many. I've seen more dead ones than live ones, put it that way.
And you're in the right place for otters, often riversides and water environments.
Yeah. You kick yourself, because I've got a mate of mine who, he goes mountain biking, but he's certainly not a wildlife lover. He doesn't fish. And he sent me a video the other week of him near a canal, and there were two otters flushing out a load of fish. I was like, you're joking me. Middle of the afternoon. I'm like, I cannot believe it. It's just luck.
Yeah, the randomness.
Yeah, randomness.
In terms of how it's influenced you, what about the sort of excitement? Does it add that extra dimension to the British countryside for you?
Yeah, 100%. But I think the people who listen to this podcast probably already in tune with being out in the countryside, and I just think it's that extra thing that you're thinking you might see now. Whereas before it was, I might see an otter, I might see some deer when I was a kid, I might see this, I might see that. It's just an extra thing now. You know, I did say I went back the other way, but I had to think about it afterwards. I thought, well, certainly wasn't worried about me. It was more concerned about getting away from me than I was about getting away from it. So I don't think there's any need to worry. I just think it's that extra element. And when you think about it, why have we got an absolute shocking deer problem in this country? Because there's not enough predators for them. Something should be there in that food chain. So to me, it's just the missing piece in the puzzle, really. Go back not that long ago in the world heartbeat, really, you got lynx doing that job. So big cats do belong in the environment. So to me, it's just a piece in the puzzle, really.
Well, that sort of takes me on to the next point, because I was going to say, how do you relate to this as an ecologist with your professional ecologist hat on? I guess you see it as a predator in the ecosystem, but also how more challenging is this subject for professional ecologists, do you think?
I think from a reputational point of view, I think if you're one of the big companies, it's going to be difficult for someone to hang the hat on it and say, I definitely believe in big cats. We're going to consider them. We're going to mention them in our, you could even put them in your risk assessment. I don't know, you know, there's enough evidence. Even toothpick analysis, that should be enough. That should be enough, that there's a big enough body of evidence that they're there. You know, it'd only been like saying, well, we've not actually seen an otter on this watercourse, but we've found a latrine and a feeding station. So it's only the same. You found a carcass which has been confirmed as having been eaten by a big cat based on toothpick analysis. That's a field sign. That's a positive. That's 15 records. And I think I spoke to you when I rang you the other day. I did say, you know, people will find a sheep carcass because it's in the middle of a field. But, you know, how many carcasses of quality have been dragged off into woodland never to be found again? By the nature of these animals, they don't want to sit eating in an exposed position.
And then nature clears it up within a week or so anyway.
Yeah, and within the spring, give it 3 weeks, it's covered in undergrowth. You just won't find it. And an autumn's worth of leaves and it's gone, done. And it's gone back to nature. You won't find those deer carcasses. I just professionally think that they're there. They're part of, they're not part of every ecosystem, but there's no reason why they shouldn't be there, because there is a huge gap for them
huge, not just a slight niche, it's a huge gap. It's not talking about, for example, back to fish. You talk about the Zander being introduced. People used to call it the perch pike. You know, people were worried about where does that fit in, and it's got its niche where it feeds, but it does feed where perch and chub would feed, and it does feed where pike would feed. But take a big cat, there's nothing else out there that will eat that huge out of control deer population, plus all the other smaller stuff underneath it if it's struggling. I still don't think people appreciate, if you stop the man in the street and went, how many deer do you think there are in England? I think you'd get some crazily small numbers. And I still don't think we fully understand how many there are.
Yeah, and their expansion rates, because they can't be culled sufficiently.
No, they can't be, can they? And, someone I spoke to in my work, he's on the, careful what I say, I guess, he's on the list for, I think he's on the list for DEFRA. He's a extremely good rifleman, and he gets call. He can be on call to dispatch something. We're not saying he's ever dispatched a cat, but imagine you've got a stag that's been injured rutting. They're probably just a bit dehydrated and a bit ill, maybe carrying a virus from or an infection from rutting, and they just pose a risk. And they are encroaching onto urban areas, and he gets called to dispatch them. It's not his job. His job's something completely different, but he's shot for a long time. That's what he has to do. And the funny thing is, that's never talked about in the media, that, you know, you've got a huge red stag wandering around on the periphery of an urban area in quite a dangerous state, and somebody has to go out in the dead of night, find it and shoot it and dispose of it. From a professional opinion, I just think they are there. There's a reason that they're fitting there. They're not possibly supposed to be there, but you just treat them as a ringneck parakeet. They're there,
and they're functionally the same as a lynx.
Yeah, they're doing the job. I've never really thought about it, but there will be a host of other species that have been driven to extinction in the UK that other species have come in and done a job for them. You know, they've slipped nicely into that niche. When I was surveying the gravel pits, the area of bones in a reed bed, I was looking for water voles, and there was just a reed bed. Once you got in there, it was full. You literally realised you were just walking upon bone upon bone upon bone of waterfowl, mainly geese. And this is an area that has a lot of migratory geese land, you know, on the fields around there. And something was feasting on those, probably every autumn to winter, I'm thinking. So if something's found that gap, which would have been there every year that feast would have come to our country, and lynx probably would have feasted on it, I'm guessing.
The sceptics would say, oh, that's fox predation, but foxes struggle with that.
I've seen fox trying to have a go. I mean, you've only got to think that people used to have geese as, they're not guard dogs, they're guard geese, but they are bloody aggressive. And if they'll chase you off, they're not concerned about a fox. I just think you've got to accept that there is an apex predator. Not many, but they are out there. And that's my opinion.
Well, I wanted to actually thank you as an ecologist for coming on. Based on what you said about the reputational risk thing, which I quite get, and that goes for vets and other professions actually where people have seen them but won't come on the podcast because they're concerned about the professional impact on their reputation. I do know two or three ecologists who've had really good sightings who are really interested and who listen to the podcast, but don't expect them to come on. They've told me they wouldn't come on, but it's a shame, but I understand that. So really grateful for you to come on and share all your thoughts on this. Finally, is there anything you want to say that we haven't covered?
I just think for anybody who's listening who wants to forget cats, forget trying to see one of those, just think about going out to see wildlife. Just think about how you are in that environment. Take yourself into that woodland or that scrubland, that heathland, that grassland, wherever you are, and think about the way you are. Are you going to answer your mobile phone? Are you going to have that noisy mountain bike? Are you going to be stomping about? Or are you going to be thinking, right, I'm going to be walking really stealthily through this woodland. I'm going to make every opportunity to see. I'm going to choose the right times of the day to do it. You know, dawn and dusk are the peak times where the emergent animals will be coming out. If I want to see that deer, it's probably going to be dusk. And I'm going to use everything that I've got to help me see it. So I am going to walk towards that noisy road so they can't hear me. They'll hear the road. And I'm going to use that, look where the wind's blowing, and make sure it's blowing in the right direction. I guess it's not bushcraft, is it? But it's just being stealthy in your environment. It's being like that fisherman. Are you going to catch more fish if you're sat there quietly blending into your background? Or if you're being noisy with some bright garish colours on, I think I know which person's going to catch the most fish. Again, forget about the cats, but if you're just going out to see wildlife, you'll see a hell of a lot more there. And I cringe, I'll be honest, when I see these people on YouTube with their phone cameras out and they're recording themselves out there and they're shouting at the camera going, oh, I've seen this, I'm going to see this. And I'm thinking, you can't have done, because it's probably a county away now, because it heard you come in a quarter of a mile ago.
Actually, the best hide is a car. If you want to be quiet, park up in a lay-by, actually, and just have a look out, and you can cough and rustle a bag of crisps and everything, and through the car window, you won't be heard. So there's that as well. You don't have to be physically out in the open.
That's a fair point, because I guess this is why fishermen see them as well. I know in a car, you can cough, you can rustle your bag of crisps, but you're there. And the point is that the cats will be used to seeing a car in that lay-by, or the deer will be.
Fisherman shelters, the same point, yeah.
Yeah, the point is that they're used to seeing a car parked in that lay-by. And that's why I think that people see them, especially the carp anglers, when they're bivvy, you know, they're asleep in their bivvies. And for people who don't know what a bivvy is, it's a fisherman's tent. They're just used to seeing them. And they will know that between the hours of 10 and just after sunrise, that these people are asleep in them. They're just a part of the landscape. And I think that's why fishermen do occasionally see them, because they've got the confidence to go there, because they're always there. Those people are always there. They pose me no risk, and I never see them.
They're on vigil, actually, aren't they, without being on vigil for big cats? And maybe that's our word of the week, vigil. I mean, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? Being vigilant and in a vigil situation.
There must be a word as well for example, the Xander. It's got its niche. I don't know what the exact word for that is, though. It slipped in there without causing a problem.
Yeah, it's a non-invasive newcomer.
Yeah, and it's established itself in numerous watercourses without causing an impact on everything else, which is unusual.
Yes, great. Adam, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you ever so much for your time, and let's hope we can have you back, either for a sighting from your son, or the trail camera does the business. It's been great to have you on. Thank you ever so much for all those insights and observations.
Not a problem. You're welcome, and I hope you have a great Christmas and New Year.
Thanks ever so much, Adam. Take care.
Take care. Cheers.